where's Dahmer when I need him? Because you know that white man was eating niggas, wasn't he? Tastes just like chicken. Having a good time. The boy worked at a chocolate factory. That should have told somebody something. All he found in his icebox was mayonnaise and Louisiana hot sauce. He was having a good time. And the black neighbors were funny, weren't they? I heard all that sawing. I thought the boy was building shelves. Another black neighbor said, well, I heard him arguing all the time, but I never heard nobody answer him back. The white folks have got real quiet. White people do not like to hear about white folks eating niggas. Trust me. They get real quiet. This is not funny anymore. Well, he was eating them. I wasn't. That motherfucker was eating niggas. Live with it. That's why, see, I just think white people stared at us because they were curious about Dahmer. Now I know white people are cannibals. They staring because they hungry. Waiting to catch a nigga on that freeway with a flat. This white man ate folks, okay? You see his trial? You'd have thought he was a Vogue model. They were so casual with this motherfucker. If that was a nigga, ate 17 young white boys, they'd have brought him in a cage chained with tape on his mouth. Don't go near him. He eats people. Don't go near him. And for the next 100 years, all your white friends would have wore you out with that. I'm liberal and stuff, and I'd like to live next to you, but, you know, I wouldn't want to wake up and be your breakfast. Oh, you remember when you niggers flipped out in the early 90s? Start eating white folks. You remember? Because that's their fantasy with us. Big bone, big pot. Oh, they're going to get us. And all the time is white folks trying to get a hold of a Mac nigga. McDonald's new burger. Mac nigga. Oh, I buy one. I had two for one Mac niggas. Look, you guys have been wonderful, and I love it that I can attract minorities. I love that, and I mean this. I hope you can appreciate what I say. Even if you don't like what I say, defend my right to say it, because this is America. And this is true. No, I mean this. It's real. And I know that it makes white folks nervous, because I went to those white schools, and I just like,
pardon me for all that stuttering at the end there. That was electronic. That was the comedian. He's my favorite black comedian, man. Dahmer eating the niggers. Hey, it is, September the 19th, 2017, Terror's Day. Yeah, we're here in the bunker, the new bunker. Well, it's about 6 months old. And we're having a good time. The weather's beautiful now. It's cooled off. Not getting that 110 degree stuff. So anyhow, that's fine. And don't forget, we're at P.O. Box 1687, San Jacinto, California, 92583. Now don't send mail to that State Street address anymore. That's no good. Yeah, we had a box up on State Street in the other end of town. We're not using that anymore. In fact, it officially comes to an end at the end of this month. So don't send any mail to that box. Only this one. 1687. I had this letter from one of our friends that was a little upset with me because he said I was trying to wipe out Christianity. Well, I don't think that's going to happen soon, boys and girls. Not soon. And I don't have the power to wipe out anything, man. I mean, most of us don't have the power to wipe out much at all. But I'm telling you one thing, I'm a critic of Christianity, that's for sure. There's plenty of evidence to support my position, but I don't argue with Christians, because I know that's an impossible situation. They're bombarding me with a lot of stuff on the internet now, sending it to my email, but I keep telling them, please don't waste your time, boys. don't waste your time. One thing you can do is image yourself. Image what you want to be, where you want to go, and all that kind of stuff. And imagine. Imagination's a great thing. Boy, I'll tell you. It keeps me going, imaging. So remember that. If you can't imagine it, you'll never be able to do it. Really early this morning, I was listening to the Presidente and his speech to the UN. I got to tell you, that was the biggest hypocritical speech I've heard in a long time. Really accusing everybody else of doing everything wrong, but the good old USA doesn't do anything wrong. We don't occupy countries. We don't kill off their leaders. We don't bomb their houses and stuff like that. And that's only the other people. So I can imagine how it felt for a lot of those people sitting in that audience to hear Trump going on and on about things like that. You see, the right wing never wants you to talk like this because it's the truth. And you got to be able to criticize yourself, or you don't have any position to criticize anybody else. Talking about North Korea having an atomic bomb. How many bombs have we got? Probably 1,000. How many bombs has Israel got? Hundreds and hundreds. So, and then you got Pakistan and all that kind of stuff. I'm going to read you something from Horrible Harry here about this China-India. I was talking about it yesterday. China and India are going to maybe go at each other. They do go at each other on the border quite a bit, only small. They throw rocks at each other. Don't you wish all countries that's the way they go to war, throw rocks at each other instead of shooting each other? Well, Horrible Harry says, I want China to go to war with India as bad as Israel wants the United States to go to war with Russia. Let's not forget, problem number one is overpopulation, and it ain't white people that are causing it. China and India both have vast military power, and a long, uninterrupted conflict would surely kill millions on both sides. I don't care who wins, we win. Now, India is fucking stupid to be squabbling with China, as all of their water for their sacred rivers originates in the Chinese territory. But this is not my problem. China doesn't play and has zero concern for human life in regards to winning even a game of checkers. I listened to stories from an old guy I know who fought in Korea. And the reality of just how many they will use to take over one position is staggering. I'm sure they haven't changed much. I recall when I was a kid, I was just barely a teenager, and when they were fighting over there in Korea. And I heard a lot about these massive attacks by the Chinese on the Marine Corps places. And it was something else, just a wall of human Chinese coming at you. Now remember, there's 8,000 of the U.S. Marines and armies, the bones are still laying up there in North Korea. We never got them back. Nobody talks about that. It's just like the MIAs in Vietnam. Once the war is over and business goes back to usual, then forget it. They don't care. And our enemies know that. They know they don't care. Just use them for cannon fodder and forget them. Back to Harry. Yes, there is climate change. Well, of course, there always is climate change. The Pacific Ocean is changing at an alarming rate, and I witness it day by day. The biggest problem in the Pacific is massive Chinese trawlers raping the ocean of every creature big and small, from slimy little snails to humpback and blue whales. They eat anything and everything you don't give a shit about international laws. The park rangers and the fish and game here, fine. and sees the fishing equipment of some white fisherman standing on the beach going for a few corbina or surf perch. They criminalize this poor bastard when chinks have virtually exterminated hundreds of species with factory fishing that are now beyond recovery. Hey, all you hippies and faggots in Greenpeace, it ain't the whites and the Norwegians causing this problem. The Chinese and the Indians both dump billions of tons of toxic pollution into the atmosphere every day, but our Jew media blames the West Virginia coal miners. I'm not going to go into statistics, but whites can never outpace the non-whites in birth at this point, if they do not start killing one another soon on a massive scale. We will simply be pushed off the face of the earth in the next 50 years. That's right. Thanks, Harry. But there are millions of white people out there cheering it on. Oh, they want the white race to disappear because they've bought the story that the white race is the most horrible race there is. Well, if you mean the white race kicks ass sometimes and have kicked ass down through history, you're right. But other races have kicked ass too. Anyhow, that was from Horrible Harry about China. I think India is almost as populated as China now. Yeah. And they are something to watch because they've got the bomb too. We'll see what happens. There's tens of thousands of Indians and Chinese have come into the country, and don't look now, but probably some Indian is dating your daughter, because if they go to college, university, that's what they get. Oh boy, what a guy you got. And while white engineers can't get a job, they're bringing these bastards in and giving them the jobs. And still, nobody's being hung from a lamppost. I think I mentioned this to you a week or so ago, how the TV networks and corporations are putting more and more ads, short ads, but more and more of them. The average ad now on television is only about a minute long. So you're liable to see four or five ads in any show you're watching. I mean, that's crazy, man. I mean, it's enough to addle your brain, and I think it has addled a lot of brains. But at least I see Toys R Us is going out of business. Yeah, that's not bad. Wasting all that money buying those Chinese toys. Maybe you can put your kid to work with a whittling knife and make a toy. You know why all these Asians and mestizos are smiling all the time when you see them? When they see you on the street, they're smiling. You know why they're smiling? Because they stole your goddamn birthright right out from under you. And you think they like you because they're smiling. They're smiling because you're so stupid. Guess what? The rumor out now is Antifa was created by the right wing. How about that? Well, I think that would have been a real coup if they had. And I'd be for that just for the hell of it. But I don't think there's enough brains in the right wing to pull it off, to do anything secret and covert like that. But that's what I would have advocated right in the first place. Infiltrate and take over and pretend to be what you're not. Have you noticed not only the tremendous increase in mulattoes, these lighter skinned niggers, these are created by the Jews in a roundabout and sometimes directly. That these mulattoes are the great danger. But do you notice on TV and the movies how they're using tinted lenses to make everybody look a little brown? Not real dark brown, but brown. All the white actors too. I notice that kind of stuff. I notice they don't make it so that a white guy looks real white. They put those tinted lenses on to make everybody a sepia color. so that to convince you it's all over before it even starts. I see the Emmy Awards had the lowest turnout ever this year. They're just a bunch of Bolsheviks talking to each other. And then they go on and on about thanking everybody. I heard a guy that's here in California, Southern California, said he's going to get up before this group that he's going to get an award from and just start reading off names, 30, 40 names, before they stop him and drag him off the stage. Hollywood's going broke and they don't have a clue of why. A good share of people in the public don't want their stuff, don't like their movies, don't like a lot of things. But they're going to keep pounding them out to the bitter end. Don't forget that show War Room on the History Channel that lays out exactly what happened with the assassination of Kennedy, the first time I've heard a credible, real story that holds up. And I think it's quite interesting, almost amusing, that Castro had his fingers in it and pulled it off. They tried to kill Castro several times. They didn't pull it off. I think the last time is when his girlfriend was supposed to poison him, but she got chicken, and she was going to take the poison up to his room in the hotel, but she chickened out and didn't do it. So Castro, after all this time, and now you know why Nikita Khrushchev, Castro scared the shit out of him with those missiles. Khrushchev just put them in there because we had missiles in Turkey right across the straits there from Russia. And he just wanted to do it to even up the score. But Castro, he really wanted to use them on the United States. And when Khrushchev found out really how serious he was, a crazy ass, he pulled them out. But now you can see that he was principally behind the assassination of John F. Kennedy with Lee Harvey Oswald's help. Show you what a crazy bastard he was. Crazy, man, crazy. It's called War Room on the History Channel. It'll come around again. But watch it and let me know what you think. Oswald almost got away with it. If there was one little problem, and that was Officer Tibbetts stood in his way, and he killed Tibbetts, and from that screwed up any possibility of escaping. He had the support of all these Alpha 66 so-called anti-Castro Cubans, and the leadership, and most of them were actually secretly working for Castro. The old story, you better watch out what you pray for or wish for, because you're liable to get it, or something unsuspected like that. But I think the military-industrial complex, they weren't unhappy Kennedy got it. And I think if they had wind of what was going on, they probably just stood back and let it happen, just like they do with all these guys, like Martin Luther King. One lone wolf like Oswald, he's got the idea to do it. He probably couldn't get it done unless the system pulled back. The FBI, CIA, military-industrial complex, military intelligence, and so forth, pull back and open the door and let you do it. And then they got plausible reliability, deniability. See a bunch of the Golden Dawn is going on trial in Greece, which I could have predicted a long time ago. First, they draw you out, build you up, give you all kinds of media, and then they chop your head off. That's the game they play. People should learn that sooner or later and not fall for it. All these groups like Golden Dawn or whatever you want to call it, they should remain covert. Lone wolf. Keep the mouth shut. Act. Don't talk all the time. Sure, your enemy's going to give you plenty of publicity before they hang you. They've got to build you up like you're a national threat before they do it. Instead of just, it's like the Klan here, all these in FATA people, everybody's screaming the Klan, the Klan, the Klan. The Klan is very small. There's very few people in the Klan. And out of those very few, almost none are very active. But they have to build these groups up. When the media, I know they did it to me, build you up and then chop your head off. These show trials go on and on and on. While the trial in Greece consists of four different cases involving the neo-Nazi party and its members, which probably is only about 50 people, since last February, the court has been examining the party's future participation in and direction of a criminal organization. Of course, it's decided by the criminals who's a criminal organization. How's that work when all the criminals have to decide who's the criminal? The Golden Dawn trial started on April 20th, 2015, and according to affiliated sources, a verdict is expected no sooner than the end of 2018. What a trial, baby. There have been significant delays in procedure. One reason is a strike by Athens lawyers from January to May 2016, which led to the postponement of 15 scheduled hearings. According to Golden Dawn Watch, which is observing the trial closely, yeah, they sure are, the Bolsheviks. Golden Dawn's lawyers have in many cases tried to delay the procedure by presenting technical obstacles to the jury, maybe like free speech. In order to examine whether the Greek neo-Nazi party fits the definition of a criminal organization, an additional overview of other criminal cases where Golden Dawn members are involved is necessary. To this end, the civil action has brought in cases that have received final judgments in the past, such as the 2008 attack by a Golden Dawn battalion on a social center in Antipatrida. The center is characterized by its anti-hierarchical, self-organized, and Antifa organization. Well, that'd be terrible, attacking Antifa. On June 30, 2008, during a Spanish language course, a man entered a social center. According to sworn testimonies from eyewitnesses, he gave the Nazi salute and shouted, "With greetings from Golden Dawn, you pussies will die." A few seconds later, a team of Golden Dawn members started vandalizing the place. Then two Golden Dawn members stabbed two people. One narrowly escaped death. At that moment, a voice called out, "The time is over," as if on cue. The battalion immediately left and the scene on their motorbikes in the same coordinated way it had arrived. Sounds like a major revolution there. The case ended with 11 and 13-year prison sentences for two Golden Dawn members for attempting homicide by intent and possession of and the use of weapons. I guess you got to use just your hands if you want to try to kill somebody. Don't have a weapon. Just use your bare hands. Another similar attack involved cutting the nose off a 16-year-old student in Athens by a young member of the youth front of the Golden Dawn. The offender received a penalty of 6-year sentence for inflicting severe intentional injury. Well, at least over there, you get out of prison pretty fast. You don't get 30, 40 years like they do here for nonsense cases. Anyhow, they'll wrap the leaders up in court for months and years as the organization dwindles and falls apart. That's simple operation. That's how they do it, over and over and over. And a lot of good people cooperate with that crap. Creston, Iowa looks a lot like many small towns in the Midwest. With a population of 7,800, it is a pretty average-sized Iowa town. Last week, Creston found itself in the news. Five young men from Creston High School decided to post a picture on social media wearing white hoods, waving a Confederate flag, and standing near a burning cross. It was a jarring image that's found its way into the newspapers, websites, and social media throughout the country, which is promoted primarily by the media itself. I've been interested in the reactions of the photo. There is an obvious outrage about the image of five young men dressed as KKK members. Well, number one thing, as Bob Miles and I used to talk about years ago, it was time for the Klan to get rid of that damn robe. Yeah, it was time a long time ago to get rid of that robe. It doesn't scare anybody. It doesn't have any power. It doesn't hide your personality. I mean, even back in the day, they used to go and check the horses out because people were identified by their horses, and they'd use that against the Klan. But all this, we don't need cross lightings. You don't need robes to get the job done. That is a media creation, and they use it against the Klan. The Klan can do much better, like we were doing back in the 80s and part of the 90s, of wearing suits and carrying briefcases. And that I did agree with Duke on. The modern image of the Klan is not walking around in a robe, not even going out in the woods and burning a cross. It's wearing a nice suit, nice tie, nice briefcase, nice car, and get things done. Yeah. You know as well as I do, most of the Klan are the worst dressers in the world. I mean, t-shirts are formal wear. As long as the media keep playing these kind of movies showing all this Klan robes and crosses burning and all that, they're going to be doing it. So they're not imitating the reality, they're imitating the media. The media creates the image. Here's a little blurb about Morris Deese. It's about the same thing you've heard before. The lawyer, Morris Deese, once defended Ku Klux Klansmen accused of beating up a black reporter covering the Freedom Riders in Birmingham, later raised money for George Wallace, and then for George McGovern, and one day had an epiphany, or at least a profitable idea. Quote, "I felt the anger of the black person for the first time," he later said in that case. Quote, "I vowed then that nobody would ever again doubt where I stood." Where he stood was a place where he could parlay the goodwill of unsuspecting into great riches. Mr. Deese and a partner, Millard Fuller, practiced law and ran a direct marketing business. He made a good living, but he wanted to get rich. Quote, "Morris and I shared the overriding purpose of making a pile of money," unquote, the partner once told Harper's Magazine. Quote, "We were not particular about how we did it. We just wanted to be independently rich." With his conscience in tatters, Millard Fuller sold his share of the business to Deese, gave the proceeds to charity, and moved away and founded Habitat for Humanity, building houses for the poor. Gee whiz. Surprise, surprise. Morris Deese stayed in Alabama and built a 200-acre estate with tennis courts, a swimming pool, and stables for his horses. And instead of doing good, he did well. And at the same time, he had a force of heavily armed security men guarding his little palace. Poverty quickly became enormously profitable. He was soon collecting millions and paying himself a salary far in excess of those paid to the heads of such advocacy groups as the ACLU, the Children's Defense Fund, and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. I know there was a lot of jealousy between these groups. So as the KKK shrank into insignificance, Deese realized through this epiphany that the way to make money is in civil rights hustle. The director of the Southern Center for Human Rights, one of SPLC's neighbors, several years ago described Deese as a fraud and a con man, saying, "You promote yourself shamelessly while failing the needs of the poor and the powerlessness. You spend so much time but accomplish so little," he said. Yeah, they finally found us out. I'm guessing that the two groups probably aren't on good terms, if they ever were. Most of this information I put out 25 years ago. Now, some who will read this information about the Southern Poverty Law Center will be shocked, which begs the question, why hasn't the talking snake media shared any of this information about Morris Deese and the SPLC? Well, why haven't they quoted Tom Metzger in his evidence? And why does the IRS allow the center to retain its 501c3 status when so little of its resources go to the group's mission? How about that? Oh, you finally found out Morris Deese was a crook. At the bottom it says, comments for this thread are now closed. In other words, you can't make a comment. Most of this stuff reminds me of the French Revolution. They had a string of big leaders in the revolution, but after a while, one by one got their head chopped off, till finally the last one, Marat, but he was killed by a maid that took care of his apartment. She stuck a knife in his throat. Couldn't happen to a better guy. One thing these Bolsheviks don't talk about, they're always screaming about the Japanese being interned. Well, Franklin Roosevelt is the president who went out of his way to appoint lifetime member of the Ku Klux Klan, progressive Democrat, and Alabama senator by the name of Hugo Black to the United States Supreme Court. And why not? Progressives and racism were the peanut butter and jelly of leftist politics. As a sitting justice, it was Black who, leading the five other FDR court appointees in the 1944 Korematsu versus the United States decision, wrote the opinion that gave a thumbs up to the internment of Japanese Americans, a decision based not on the Constitution but on race. Well, whenever these left-wingers start screaming about that stuff, you might want to bring that up. You might want, it was a KKK man that it took care of that job. Now, will the Trust of the National Mall add this interesting information to the FDR Memorial? We will see. What about adding to the corrective list of segregationist views of the Washington Park memorializing former President Lyndon B. Johnson, or the Potomac-spanning Woodrow Wilson Bridge, or the Richard B. Russell Senate Building? Russell, the author of the notorious Southern Manifesto that opposed civil rights and desegregation. But the moment here is not just that FDR Memorial and all the rest of these Washington monuments ignore both FDR's Klan relationships and the racist roots of these other monuments, memorials, and buildings that dot the Washington landscape. The point is that whether it was Democratic Party founder Jefferson or Jefferson Memorial backer FDR and LBJ Richard Russell or Bill Clinton in 1997 and Hillary Clinton today playing the race card while skillfully attributing racism to others in a stable of the American left. How about that? Hillary Clinton may be the latest, but she isn't the first. Indeed, here is her husband, Bill Clinton, calling the Trump slogan, Make America Great Again, racist, even though he himself had used the exact same slogan when he ran for president. In essence, Hillary Clinton, like all her race card-playing predecessors in her party specifically, including her husband, is merely the latest to play the race card. The serious problem here is that the mainstream media doesn't have the guts to call Hillary out as the new David Duke, or in fact just the latest reincarnation of the rest of the shamefully infamous and always leftist party on race. Don't to worry, in this corner, I will. That's true, the Democrat Party was the headquarters of white racism for hundreds of years. And the way Trump's moving, maybe I should have voted for Hillary. Maybe she is more racist than Trump. Now that I think of it, I think depriving white racists and neo-Nazis free speech is the best thing that happened. Quiet. Yeah, I think it's the best thing that's happened. In the end, but you got to follow it to the end result. Don't forget, First, they give you a name, a title, neo-Nazi, hater, or whatever, Ku Klux Klan. Then they build you up big time in the press as they infiltrate you with all kinds of informants and agent provocateurs. Then they cause something to happen, something always does, and then they move in for the kill. It's an age-old method of shutting your enemy down. The right wing has never seemed to learn that lesson. Are you hearing anything about the investigation of the death in Charlottesville of the gal that got run over by a car? And anything else down there? I mean, several people have been arrested, but I don't hear anything about how they're investigating, what they're finding out, or anything about the guy that was driving the car down the hill. I heard that some people said he had a problem. Well, maybe he did, but it'd be interesting to know how the investigation is moving along. That must mean they're covering up shit, and they're certainly not taking the cops to the woodshed for not intervening. Everything I've ever been involved in, the cops were all over us. Well, you only got a few days, boys and girls. A numerologist claims the world will end September 23rd. He said this would occur as another planet is set to collide with the Earth. British newspaper The Sun reported. Meade, who made the claim, said that strange things were now happening in the world, which were predicted in the past as signs of the end time. Well, there's strange things happening, I think, and this guy's one of the most strange. Yeah. I was listening to Coast Radio last night, and they get some real wackos on there. They get some good stuff, but they get some real wackos. They had one of these Christian fortune tellers on there last night, laying it all out. He knew exactly what was going to happen and what the stages were going to be. And he knew. He had it all figured out, and that moderator was going, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Huh. I forgot to mention, this guy's a Christian numerologist. Yeah, they're the best kind of fortune tellers. I thought the Old Testament was against fortune telling. I think I'll wait up for that. Man, that could be exciting. I don't want to miss a thing. Well, have they taken down all the Civil War statues yet? I hear one town down in Kentucky wants you to give them to them. They want to put them all up down in their town, which is a good idea. Be a great tourist attraction. Yeah. Don't forget that Statue of Liberty. Take that down for sure. Well, I'm going to start reading on an article I thought was pretty good. In fact, they're all pretty good in Liberty Bell. How Zion Triumphs. Now, I can't do this all in one day, so we'll have to stretch it out. A deception by mirages has been perpetrated on the very gullible American people and the entire world by Israel and the U.S., working very closely with Iran to break down Iraq and thus throw the Arab nation into a state of turmoil and possible anarchy. Now, this was from 1987. Although it may be quite difficult to generally uninformed American citizens to believe that their government, Washington, is continually deceiving them, I have definite and unequivocal proof of it. This is why I have been told not to relate this story publicly. Such threats don't bother me. I am used to them. I ignore them. But what I cannot overlook is the fact that our government is so much under the control of foreign power named Israel and the world Zionists that Washington would do anything, no matter how un-American, to promote their evil designs. Right now, at this writing, I'm attempting to reach the vast majority of middle-class Americans who may still have some small amount of latent patriotism left to their bones, to put it in the street language used today in commercial advertising. I want to reach people just north of cheeseburgers and beer and just south of quiche and white wine. Contrary to the political statements coming out of Washington for your gullible consumption, for the past 4 years, the U.S. and Israel secretly prevented an Iraqi victory by sending billions of dollars worth of arms and military equipment to Iran. Now, this might sound like blasphemy in the view of the outrageously barbarous treatment of the American embassy hostages by Iran, which all our citizens resented with great bitterness. But remember what you did. You dislodged the democratic leader Mossadegh in Iran. In other words, you made a palace coup, the CIA, and you got payback. Don't forget that. You might logically assume that Iran would be the last country on earth which the U.S. taxpayers shell out money to save it from disaster. Well, guess again, you're dead wrong if you follow the logical conclusion reached by exact reasoning about what is right and or wrong. Your government in Washington is not logical. It has, oh yeah, it's logical for the right reasons, for the money class. It has no sense of what is morally right or wrong. They don't care. Your government is neither logical nor least bit reasonable, nor even honest where Israel's concerned. Israel fears Iraq. Israel hates Iraq. Israel does not fear or hate Iran, despite the smokescreen of statements by the Ayatollah Khomeini and the various Israeli officials when they publicly exchange threats and denounce each other as evil to the core. The acrobatic tricks of verbiage pouring out of the White House to present Iranian government, but that's just for public consumption. It is simply to keep the peasants happy, at least the ones who can still recall the barbarism of the hostage crisis in Iran. But you realize the Jews have been after Iraq for a long time to destroy Iraq, because Iraq was a pretty close threat to them. Aren't average Americans curious enough to wonder why the European press is full of stories about American-Israel aid to Iran? While hardly a word of it gets into the closed American press, I wonder why not. The latest reports from Denmark, because Israel has no merchant fleet and has been using Danish vehicles or vessels to send a steady supply of the latest American weapons to Iran. It would be simpler and more cheaper if the U.S. just openly shipped weapons to Iran instead of doing it on the sly with Israel acting as a go-between broker. For a fee, of course. Israel doesn't do anything without being fully paid in advance for it. Shipping arms via Israel and Denmark fools no one except slow-thinking Americans. The entire world is aware of the American military aid to Iran, no matter how carefully it may be veiled from public view in this country. I wonder how that all of this works out to the present situation with Iran. The latest reports come from Denmark because Israel has no merchant fleet and has been using Danish vessels. Wait a minute. Israel doesn't do anything without being fully paid in advance. Shipping arms via Israel and Denmark fools no one. I said that. The entire world is aware of American military to Iran. Military aid, no matter how carefully it may be veiled from public view in this country. Danish government statement said Israel has shipped thousands of tons of American-made weapons to Iran on Danish ships. Now that's a very interesting situation. Now that's a pretty clear statement, isn't it? It is not difficult to understand. Now this is from 1987, remember. But I think this is after the Iran-Iraq war. The Danish Merchant Sailor Union was more specific in a recent news release stating, "We have the complete documentation on these transshipments of arms from the U.S. via Israel and Denmark to Iran." Henrik Berlew, head of the Union of Merchant Seamen, said, quote, "We have the official papers. We have the exact dates for any interested parties at the UN or elsewhere to see. There's absolutely no doubt at all." When asked about this by Reuters, the British news service, Israeli officials refused to comment because they said the U.S. government does not approve of discussing such shipments. Since when does Israel care what the U.S. tells them? And guess what kind of devious reply the American government made to this same inquiry? Here it is. It is against U.S. policy to supply American-made weapons to either side in the Iraq-Iran war. We are totally neutral, as is Israel, which was a bald-faced lie. Like hell, the U.S. and Israel are neutral. We are about as neutral as we were during the Israeli-Arab war. And I'm sure I don't have to elaborate on the statement. Even if the U.S. were actually neutral, as the White House claims, that would not be reasonable in view of what Iran did to the American embassy and to American citizens there who were imprisoned for over a year by sheer brigandage. By rights, the U.S. should be doing everything possible to see that the brave little nation of Iraq wins the war. But again, we don't do what is right in Washington. We always do what is politically expedient. We don't do what is reasonable either. We do exactly what Israel orders. And for any skeptics reading this, I assure you that I do not exaggerate one bit. Instead, the U.S., Israel, Iran are engaged in a three-way assault on Iraq and a con job on the American public. I spent some time in Washington recently mainly to find out what I could about why the U.S. does not seriously try to stem either the raging tide of illegal aliens inundating our borders or the drug traffic, which has now reached epidemic proportions, with banks, lawmen, and even judges getting cut in on the huge profits. You know, people say, why don't they tell us the truth? Well, you had a lot of people telling you the truth, but you didn't listen. I will report on these two subjects later. Right now, I wish to inform all Americans on the express purpose of Ronald Reagan, that two-bit actor, Strategic Defense Initiative, commonly referred to as the frumpy world of the establishment press as Star Wars. It's not what you may believe. It's not what you have been told. The entire concept of this major defensive weapon system was developed by the instigation of the Israelis and not solely to protect America from Russian missiles. Israel in 1980 asked Mr. Reagan to use the American scientific resources to develop such a system because the Zionists are deathly afraid that sooner or later some Arab country is going to gain nuclear weapons and blow the hell out of Tel Aviv. It is as simple as that, folks. The fact that such a system might also protect the United States in some way is merely a side benefit. It is certainly not the primary purpose to ask American taxpayers to provide all the billions of dollars to provide Star Wars. The official government documents that I have seen state that Star Wars will protect the U.S., Israel, Britain, West Germany, forget the others. Israel will be the chief beneficiary. The highly publicized visit to the U.S. last fall by Marxist Madonna of the Philippines, Mrs. Corazon Aquino, should not fool anybody in any way. That stuff about reminiscent visit to her old home in Boston and the glad hand staged reunion of her old alma mater were for the benefit of the sucker press. She and her late husband had lived in Boston because they had been formulating the policy of the Philippine Communist Party and had to leave the country when their treason became known. Her only reason for hitting the trail to Washington was exactly the same as that of never-ending parade of Israeli officials to that same feat of government to bleed the American taxpayers of their hard-earned money. Renewing old ties and friendships were window dressing, and she wants the money before the slow-thinking American public catches on to the fact that she has been at the front for the Marxists for many years, both here and in her own country. Her first act was as president proved this. Her first signed order was to release all the jailed communists. And she was made to somewhat secret agreement with the Marxist forces to boot the U.S. out of our bases in 1991. She always gets around direct questions by saying firmly that she wants the Philippine people to vote on wherever or whatever to keep the bases, knowing full well that another rigged election will decide to seize the American bases. Despite the U.S. reports doctoring before you read them in the closed American press, Cory Aquino did not win any election to the presidency. Mrs. Marcos won it, despite some cheating on both sides. But rather than allow President Marcos to remain as head of the government, the U.S. simply got rid of him by placing a gun at his head and kidnapping him from the presidential palace, taking him to Guam, where he had no wish to go. This act left Mr. Aquino as the new president by default, you might say, or whatever term you might wish to apply to the totally phony election results. And we criticize the Soviets for doing the same thing. As all readers should know by now, Mrs. Aquino has no intention of checking the communist uprising in her country. She is part of it with the help of the Catholic Church leaders, such as the formidable Cardinal Sin, no pun intended. A Marxist government is assumed for the Philippines in the not-too-distant future. The communists, for example, now exert direct control over 723 towns and over 10,000 of the smaller hamlets. This is a 75% increase over the amount of territory controlled by the Marxists when Mr. Marcos was in power. And with no opposition from the Aquino government, they are gaining every day. Mrs. Aquino never faces up to the communist threat. Instead, she merely suggests a ceasefire. This would only serve the communist side. It would give them time to regroup and become much stronger. And the elite units of the Marcos army have mostly been disbanded by Mrs. Aquino so as to make sure that they won't wipe out any communist strongholds. The rest of the Philippine armed forces are now short of everything, from boots to rifles. Yet the Marxist groups and troops are receiving more arms every day, some stolen from government armories, while the soldiers guarding them look the other way. Mrs. Aquino knows that her orders to slack off on hunting down communists will lower the morale and is certainly to nullify the efficiency of the armed forces built under Marcos. It has been reported in European press that Mrs. Aquino wants an armistice for another reason. She wants to clean out the officer corps. Marcos trained personnel who are anti-communist and experienced in fighting communists. That was the Philippine situation back in 1987. It gives you also an idea of how they were closing in on Iraq. Iraq was a better ally than, of course, Iran was, at least at the time, and I think now, too. It was primarily to protect Israel that we went after Iraq. It had nothing to do with 9/11. Well, I'm going to get into a little World War II stuff here, which a lot of our people like. Several people who have read some brief mention in one of my books about the interview I had with Generalissimo Franco, France of Spain, in 1975, shortly before he died, have asked for more details of it, since none of what he told me has ever been printed in detail anywhere in the world. I believe that readers of this magazine may want to read about it. Since El Caudillo never cared much for interviews, and only consented to see me after he learned from my background that I was anti-Zionist, I believe that he had to say in his final interview with a foreign press is very important. I was in Spain on other business at the time. Like all other journalists, I was routinely turned down on any possible interview with the ailing Spanish leader until I was getting ready to fly to New York. Then word came to me that the car was to pick me up next day at the Monte Real Hotel or the Arroyo Fresno in Madrid. The chief question I had for Senior Franco was about his views on the ill-fated American practice of rushing arms and fuel from Spain to Israel every time a war broke out in the Middle East. He answered this for me concisely because he wanted to talk about the other events of history which he considered of much greater importance than future history books are written about him. He told me that the U.S. had deceived him and sent war materials jointly owned by Spain and the U.S. to Israel. Despite his vehement protest against such unilateral action on the part of the American government, he then informed the U.S. that this would never be allowed to happen in the future, or all American bases would be closed in Spain. He also said that the U.S. had hurriedly sent NATO supplies and weapons to save Israel from defeat in violation of signed agreements. This reminds me when I was in Spain in 1958. I was there for just a couple of days, but they had good border watch there, I'll tell you that. And he had ordered Tarion Air Force Base to take down the American flag. He must have been pissed off over this Israel stuff. And we thought that was so horrible at the time. But based on history, what was going on, I understand why he did it. Since I landed in a Tarion Air Force Base just outside Madrid. Of course, I knew that where Israel is concerned, the U.S. government doesn't care what Spain or any other nation wants. In fact, to save Israel, the U.S. would even doom America to complete disaster, which since 1987 has happened. When I asked the venerable Spanish leader why Americans fought and raised so much money for the communist side during the Spanish Civil War, while doing nothing at all to help the non-communist Franco forces, he told me that even that far back, American Jews influenced the American people to be against him. As a schoolboy at the time of that war, I had read the propaganda emanating out of Hollywood about the almost holy crusade of the communist forces arrayed against General Franco. The infamous Lincoln Brigade in the Marxist Army was made up entirely of American volunteers. At that time, we didn't yet have a law prohibiting U.S. citizens from serving in foreign armed forces. So it was easy to recruit such famous people as actor Errol Flynn and the writer Ernest Hemingway for the communist forces. I never found any records to indicate that any Americans were on the non-communist side. That's interesting because there's always been rumors that Errol Flynn was a secret National Socialist mole during World War II. Very interesting. It couldn't be both. Knowing well that immediately after World War II, the U.S. government put undue pressure on Spain, I wanted to hear from the general what really happened, and he was glad to oblige. He said Americans began turning the screws on me to liberalize my regime in 1945. When I refused, and the U.S. finally understood that even such a powerful nation as then all-victorious America could not engineer or overthrow my government, which they tried to do several times, failing badly in every attempt. The U.S. then decided to deal with me anyway, with the aid of France, a country that also refused to be a puppet of the U.S. I managed to survive. And so it went in Spain until November 20th, 1975, that the day of the greatest Spanish leaders died after heading the government for 30 years. When he died after such a long period of no changes in Spanish loyalty, not everyone was unhappy. It may have been a sad day for Spain, but in three cities, Washington, Moscow, and Tel Aviv, it was a cause of celebration. Spanish communist Jews exiled to Russia and Israel by General Franco's government headed en masse back to Spain like maggots going after a corpse. El Caudillo liked to talk about two world figures when he enjoyed a long-lasting friendship. They were the Duke of Windsor and Marshal Philippe Pétain of France. It required 2 days of visits for him to relate to me the intimate details of these close relationships. He also mentioned quite favorably two other well-known individuals, both Americans, whom he would like to have met in person, but never did. They were Charles A. Lindbergh and General George S. Patton. General Patton had made plans to visit the Spanish leader before his ultimate untimely death in 1945, which was attributed to what was called an automobile accident, unquote. General Franco was well acquainted with the Duke and Marshal Pétain. I took many notes about both his friends, and he talked fondly about them. Almost none of it has been printed anywhere, so you are reading it for the first time. First, here is an account of how former King of England became acquainted with General Franco. They had much in common. In May 1940, when the Germans were closing in on Paris, the Duke of Windsor left his apartment in that city for his home in southern France at La Croix. At that time, for a personal point of reference, I was a teenage recruit undergoing training in the La Légion Étrangère Française, the French Foreign Legion. You know, Pastor Miles, Robert Miles, volunteered for the Free French Legion prior to the war. Hitler's mighty Wehrmacht stood on the Pyrenees in Madrid, fairly crawling with German agents, with General Franco's blessing. The ranking German officials in Spain were Baron and Baroness von Stur. Both were tall, talented, and skilled diplomats, commanding much respect among the international set residing in his neutral nation of Spain. Both were superb linguists in 5 or 6 languages, and both, importantly, they had ready access to General and Senora Franco, the only members of the Foreign Diplomatic Corps accorded this privilege. Prime Minister Winston Churchill, well aware of the Duke's German sympathies, wanted to whisk the Windsors off the continent and out of grasp of Hitler, whom both Windsors greatly admired. Prior to hostilities, the Duke and Duchess had visited Hitler. The British and American press didn't like this fact, that the Duke had saluted Hitler when they met, that the Duchess had told the press that Adolf Hitler was one of the most charming men she'd ever met. And believe me, she was one woman who had met many men in her lifetime. Franco's Minister of Interior, Serrano Sorier, who was also his brother-in-law, was a close collaboration with the German clandestine service since the Spanish Civil War. Well, that's about it for today. I'll pick up on that tomorrow, because this is quite an interesting story by Jim Taylor, who was a hell of a writer and dug up a lot of stuff that most other people didn't get to. I know one thing. General Pétain in France was a great man. He kept things going on the home front while de Gaulle saved his ass running over to England. Yep, Western Islands, which is a John Birch Society publishing outfit, at least it was in the old days, put out a good book on that. I believe it was called A Bucket of Eels by Hilaire de Bock. And really good book. I'm pretty sure that was what it was about.
I did what I did for the good of the realm. The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agreed to tell each other over and over, till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left once we abandon the lie?
Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.